I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with actress Natalie Dew and, well, more than anything, it's a right laugh. This is a really fun episode. And we talk about some great records and we talk about some records that made Natalie laugh. And I promise I wouldn't laugh at her choices, but... As you'll find out from the very first pick, I snigger like a child. It's such a great episode, this. And before we get rolling with it, a few thank yous. So thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thank you to 76 for producing this podcast. And as ever, biggest thanks go to you lot for continuing to support this podcast and do all the things you do on the socials. You know, you give us little likes and loves and shares and retweets, and it really matters, and it's really nice. And by all means, always drop us a message. You know, always love to hear your thoughts on the podcast, anything that you'd like to see change. Just, yeah, give us some criticism. I'm up for it. I'll take it on the chin. Also, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, when you get to the end of my chat with Natalie, go and have a look in the archives, because if you like your actors, then you can hear me talking to Amanda Abington, Joe Hartley, Maxine Peake, Michael Smiley, Thomas Turgoose. But if you like your music, you can hear me talking to Foo Fighters, The Killers, Fatboy Slim, Suede, Idols, Motley Crue. Oh, gosh, the Wonder Stuff. The list goes on. Lots of comedians: James A. Caster, Ed Gamble, Maisie Adam, Jade Adams, Rich Wilson, Marcus Birdman. Loads and loads of comedians have been on, and they're always ace chats. Go have a rummage in the archives when you've finished with today's chat. Let's talk about today's chat. You ready? Good. Okay, here we go then. Please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Natalie Dew. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the cacao bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast. It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin. Okay, we are recording. Natalie, how are you?
I'm really well, thank you, Stu. How are you?
Good, good, good. I mean, I'm liking this facade that we've not had a conversation already about the fact you've got squirrels living in your loft. You're not fine, are you? You're having a meltdown about these squirrels.
Absolute mare. I don't know what to do. It's like the Sylvanian families, but like extreme.
That's the name of the Channel 5 documentary.
But I feel terrible about it, and I... I think they're just going to have to stay.
Okay.
It's okay. I'll just put headphones in and worry about the damage later, you know.
Well, Natalie, before we get on with your song picks for today, I'm just going to ask you to cast your mind back over the last sort of 18 months and just tell me a little bit how you found lockdown, both personally and creatively.
I mean, it was really hard. I think I sort of took for granted how much people make up my whole being / existence / happiness. So I think not getting giggles from so many people was actually just a huge, huge thing. And so I found it really difficult. But I am an only child, so I have an understanding of being isolated or being lonely, as it were.
Yeah.
So I'm quite good at making my own entertainment. However, I mean, my boyfriend would say that's absolutely a lie because my neediness value went up to 1,000.
Yeah.
And so I think what I found really hard was getting my validation from one person. So if he didn't applaud me after I made a dinner, I was sort of like, well, do you hate me? Like, I don't understand. I mean, are you trying to make me cry? I don't understand. So I think that level of awfulness was there. But I think creatively, I think what was odd but also nice was having space to be in your head, which I don't love being in my own head. I would rather be most other places. But actually having that time to explore reading or you know, watching things and solely watching things, not being fixated on my phone or like just giving, you know, attention to one specific thing, I think was a real lesson that I took from it. And going outside, like walking.
It's so crazy, isn't it? How, I mean, I love the fact that we're constantly talking about lockdown with words such as like was and when, not as in like we're still in it, which is lovely because we're recording this in October. And it is so strange how them little things that I guess maybe pre-lockdown sometimes I'll just get an Uber or this is a ball ache, but to just walk somewhere was just joyous, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think also, like I said, it's like having holiday eyes where you live, whereas when you're on holiday you're like, oh look, a rock, oh look, you know, a piece of brick, and you sort of lose that where you are. And I think I was in London, and so to suddenly see London in a completely different landscape, and also I went into the centre of London a couple of times, and it's just so beautiful, but you never see above a certain height because you're so faced with people. You don't really notice anything. So to have those holiday eyes and sort of being like, do you know what? London's actually really pretty. And the architecture is like, there's loads to look at, but you're never afforded that glimpse of it, as it were.
Absolutely. It's so strange. I went into an office, which kind of gave up during lockdown in Shoreditch, and about 3 weeks into lockdown, when it was just like, even if you go outside and breathe, you're going to get it, that kind of hysteria. I thought, well, I need to go to my office and collect some stuff. So I kind of drove. I mean, I live in Essex. I drove into Shoreditch, and I'm a club promoter, so I've put events on in Shoreditch for the last sort of 10 years as well. And so I'm used to seeing thousands of people at any given point, like just hopefully come into my venue. But I pulled up and I couldn't see one person. And I was like, it was completely 28 days later style. And I went into this like WeWork shared office building to get my stuff. And there was one security guy there. Obviously all the offices were empty. And he refused to even come anywhere near me. I just went, oh, hi. And swiped in to go to my office. But I had a cap on. I had a bandana like pulled up over my nose. I had gloves on and a rucksack and a bag. And I just literally run into this office and just grabbed like my Mac and all of this, like anything that was of any value, and then run back out of there. The CCTV would have looked ridiculous. Now, you think 3 weeks ago had I tried to have done that, I would have been arrested.
Yeah.
But as I was kind of sort of throwing it in the car, before I jumped back in my car, I just stopped and I just thought, do you know what? Breathe this in a little bit, because it's never going to be like this ever again. You're never going to see London like this. And it was beautiful and terrifying. It was like, and Yeah, and but I think there was still an element of excitement, and I say excitement.
I know what you mean, though. I do know what you mean.
You know, taking nothing away from the severity of it, of like, oh my God, this is like something we've never experienced. Like, yeah. Wow, look at this. And then I think fast forward about 2 months and that excitement had gone well out the window. And I was like, oh, my God.
No.
I was also kicking around the house thinking, I've just hoovered. Why is everyone not applauding me?
It's awful, isn't it? But, like, you sort of regress. Like, you feel there's something quite childish about just wanting claps. Like, why am I not getting claps in my house? Yeah.
All right. Well, let's applaud each other at the end of this podcast for an amazing job. Well done, right?
Yeah, we will.
Right. Okay, Natalie, tell me the song that you think's got the greatest ever intro, please.
Okay. Can I just say, I'm so nervous about this whole experience because I've got a feeling I've got the worst taste in music of any guest you've probably ever had.
Okay.
So I'm just going to put that out there.
Okay.
You're going to roll your eyes a lot.
I'm not here to judge.
It's very exposing for me. I'm basically treating this like confession more than anything else. Okay. So my song with the greatest intro is the Baywatch theme. I'm always here, Jimmy Jameson.
It's a tune though, isn't it?
It's a great tune, and like it's so anthemic.
Mm-hmm.
I think anything with this really strong drum intro where you're being told that you're essentially being called,
yeah,
I think is what I look for from an intro.
I didn't expect that. I mean, this is one, like, I haven't seen your songs before, and I didn't mean to sort of like snigger when you said it because
no, you said there's no judgment.
I know,
immediately.
I did not expect the Baywatch theme. I mean, I'm 48, so when that television show came about, the opening credits as a whatever I was, a 14-year-old lad, that was everything you could ever want from television.
Oh my God. It was dreamy. Absolutely dreamy, yeah.
To try and actually kind of bring some credibility to this.
You're going to have to do this a lot during this podcast.
It is a call of arms, isn't it? He's got a sense of urgency about it, hasn't it?
Yes. But also you've got the slight tinkling of like the piano. Like there's that slight, you know, it's very seascapey.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, there's that thing of like, there's danger, but also like, yeah, it's rousing.
Mm.
Also, I have a very strong affiliation of it being on when I was on Nights Out. And it was very much like you got fireman lifted when that song came on. And I'm not saying it at all, you know, I was not a victim. It was not something that I needed to happen, but there is something wonderful about being lifted and being lifted on a night out in a fireman's lift. And I've got such a strong affiliation to that, being like, it's now, it's coming, it's now. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. I'm just picturing that every time you make dinner, like your boyfriend just picks you up, puts you down at the table. Amazing.
I am exhausting.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. I'm going to take you back for track two. Natalie, and ask you please to tell me the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please.
Okay. So I was about between three and four, and it was Kylie Minogue.
Mm-hmm.
I Should Be So Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky that we had a VHS tape that had three of her videos on. And I think it was I Should Be So Lucky, Je Ne Sais Pas, and Locomotion.
Yep.
And basically, it was just those three videos. And I would burn. I mean, there's videos of me watching the video, and I'm gurning watching this video. I mean, I want to ingest it.
Yeah.
And I think I can remember that feeling of excitement of, it's cool, I don't understand it, but I want it, and she's brilliant, and there's a bathtub, and there was so much visually pleasing about it, as well as listening to it. And I've got a really strong memory of thinking that that was happiness.
So that was the emotion, happiness.
Yeah, happiness, like pure, unadulterated, like joy.
Yeah.
But also wanting it, like wanting to obtain it, like whatever that feeling was.
Yeah. But that's surely how you've just described that. That's got to be the template, you know, the final goal when you try and write perfect pop songs. That's what you want, isn't it? You want youngsters to be literally trying to get every possible, you know, squeeze every last drop of that. Like, absolutely.
And I was so part, I mean, I'm an 80s, sort of late 80s baby, so like going into the 90s, so I couldn't have been more the target audience in terms of all of that. Like, I got all of the boy band era, all of, you know, then girl band era as well. So like, yeah, I mean, it's so funny, when I knew I was doing this, I was like, I feel like all of my answers are essentially going to be the top 40, all from like now 48, because like, because that was my life, you know. Yeah. It was very much, you know, Sundays recording that. And that was, I mean, you just ingested it. That was your everything.
It's really interesting that at that age, you would have just found like Kylie as Kylie the pop star, not like so many of us that had been watching her on, you know, Neighbours for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, the product was tailor-made already by then, you know. Nowadays, you don't have soap stars becoming pop stars. I guess now you X Factors, and that's the same kind of marketing tool, isn't it? It's like,
absolutely, yeah.
Put these people that, you know, look like the people next door on television for you know, 3 months, and by the time they release their record, you know they are. You know they're back there, and you're in love with them, and it's, you know, the story's there, and it's an instant hit. But, yeah, it was... go on, sorry.
I think it's also... I think it's also odd because, like, I now have such a strong memory of owning that video of the music video, whereas now, obviously, music videos are so accessible. But, like, to be able to see them and the worlds they create and the sets they create, I absolutely burned that tape through. Like, I just couldn't have got enough of it.
It's that there's something really, and I'm always scared to go into kind of, you know, granddad territory when it was all just fields, but there is something really lovely about that exclusiveness and elusiveness of music then, where you could literally, whatever you could get your hands on, whatever scraps you'd devour. Whereas now, I'm sure if you went on Instagram, you could probably see what Kylie had for breakfast this morning.
And
you only want that little glimpse behind the curtain, don't you? You don't want everything, because it kind of takes the magic. I don't know if you agree with me, but...
Yeah, totally, totally agree. And also because they were other. Mm. Like, there was that thing of... And I was around later, where it became a lot more about sticker albums and, you know, the Spice Girls photo album and things like that. So it was, you always wanted to get more and more of their personality, or more of it, or to feel like you were their pal.
Yeah.
And they completely commercialized on that later on and everything. But definitely in, you know, just to have this one tape of her, that was mine.
Yeah.
I didn't share it with anybody else. It was very like, nobody else in that room existed as soon as that tape was on. It was just purely a bonded connection over our, you know, TV.
And where was home?
Devon.
Devon. Oh, lovely. Yeah. What a beautiful place to grow up. Was it a lovely place to grow up?
Yeah, it was. It feels, it was. I was really lucky, I think. But then I was one of those children, as soon as I got to an age as well, I was like, oh my God, I want to be anywhere else other than here. Sure. Like, whereas now I've got such a love and appreciation for it, because it's of all the beautiful things that are around it. But yeah, I was very itching to get out to a city and just everything to be open past 5 and like be able to like, I don't know, like do stuff after 7. And yeah, there was a lot of that.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to ask you for track thing and stay in them early years. And I'm going to ask you to tell me, please, the song reminds you of your time at school, please.
Okay, so I don't really know the rules around this. So I want to do, can I do an honorary mention as
well? Yes, of course you can.
Okay, so my honorary mention has to go to Feeder, Comfort in Sound album. But just the way I'm feeling was like, I loved Feeder. And I know he's been on the show, and I actually, when I was about 18, I bumped into the main singer, Grant, in Camden Market. And I was like, oh my God, are you the main guy from Feeder? And and he was like, yeah, I am. And I was like, I was literally just staring at him, and he was like, have you got a pen or something? I was like,
Just happy looking, thank you.
Yeah, I'm just telling you who you are. and then just sort of left it at that. But I had I have such a strong memory of walking to town, and like, you know, summers just spent walking to like anywhere to go and sit and really think about my feelings. And and Feeder just were a real soundtrack. So I have to do an honorary shout out to Feeder because I genuinely adore them. But if the song that I'm going to say is Little by Little, Oasis, which was just everywhere. It was just, it's funny because music at that time, I really attached to people. And Little by Little was my best friend, Moo. She was really into Oasis and we just really bonded over them and just loved them. Like they were just, yeah, we just adored them. And so Oasis is so tied up in my friendship with her, which is still, she's still my best friend in the world. So yeah.
Oh, it's such a beautiful record as well. I think Noel sings that, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I kind of prefer Noel's voice to Liam's.
I know. I don't know if we're allowed to say that. I mean, you probably are. I know I do as well, because I think there's oddly something quite, not pure. Pure is not the right word, but there's a slight naivety sometimes to his, like his singing quality that feels quite, it just doesn't feel jaded.
Yeah.
By anything.
Yeah. It's not as gnarly as Liam's, is it?
No. It feels hopeful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's something a bit more hopeful in them. Whereas Liam's is quite good if you're like on the 73 bus and you want to have like a bit of a cry or just feel really angry. Like Noel's is a bit like, there might be sun at the end of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So how was school?
School was great. I mean, I know people have a really tough time at school and it is tough growing up, but like I loved school. I was an only child. So like, yeah, being around all my pals all the time was just brilliant. And loads of different groups of people. And I think, especially with music, like I've got such an affiliation with different people with different musics. Like one group of friends were really into American punk. So like Blink 182 and all of that sort of vibe were huge. And so
you would have caught that kind of generation of American Pie and all of that kind of.
It. Not quite into Sum 41, but yeah. Blink 182. I was really like, oh, like it just, I don't know. There's something so gloriously self-indulgent about it.
Yeah.
And like unashamedly so. And I just loved, and it was that sort of emo thing before emo was emo really.
Yeah.
But it was just about noise and feelings. And I really, really liked that. And so it was a nice sort of experimental time of figuring out, I guess, musically who I liked. But I was always in loads of different camps. And I think you'll sort of see this from this, I guess. But I was in loads of, I never really had a style of music. I never really religiously followed like a group. I have quite a varied taste, I would say, which I hope is good. But I think, I don't know, I get really worried that people, I don't know, sometimes I think people can be a bit snobby about music. And that's probably because my music taste is awful. But like,
I don't get it. I don't understand why anyone would be snobby about music. I think
people are.
I've had people from some of the, you know, on paper, coolest bands in the world on this podcast.
Yeah.
Their first records and their school records, they're not cool. They're like, it's just what they were into. And like,
yeah
I think it's yeah, I've never judged. I think it was like one of the first ones I ever done. I think episode 2, the guy from Block Party chose something really
so cool.
Cheesy. And I just thought, amazing. He set the barrier there that like, look, don't matter how cool you are, don't come on here and start making out you were listening to obscure indie B-sides when you were 7. It wasn't happening. Like,
I know.
You was watching Kylie VHSs like everyone else. Of course you
were. We were all doing it. Not party. Yeah, absolutely. But I think there's something glorious about that because it's just the feeling and the memory that is attached to music. Yeah. It's so evocative. And I think you spend so many years trying to fit in or trying to be cool, trying to like who people like. And it's nice getting to an age where you're like, I just don't care.
Yeah. I do think it's like in them sort of years where you said you had different groups and different music with them. I do think that that's a really important time because that's where I think a lot of people that need to kind of find that one group, that's where they kind of find their tribe. And that will then dictate music, fashion, where they go clubs, where they drink, where they go to pubs and stuff.
Social like circles, all of that.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I do think it's like a really fascinating time there. And it's so good if you've got different pockets of friends that you can experiment with different musics and scenes and stuff.
But it's a real gift as well. Like, I mean, I'm sure you talked about this with other guests as well, but it, you know, in the world of mixtapes and things like that, and the gift that you sort of gave to people with that, I remember a lot of my music stuff came from people burning me a CD.
Yeah.
And like, because otherwise you weren't introduced to anybody. And I guess you sort of get that now with like the old Spotify playlist.
Sure.
If you go, you know, I don't know, dinner if I'm cooking a Chinese or, you know, whatever you put into the search, you'll maybe hear something that you've not heard. But I think it's such a beautiful thing to give to somebody to go, I like this for these reasons. These make me think, and here is it for you, you know, and you, it's the gift of that to someone.
Absolutely.
And I miss that. I absolutely miss that. I think it's such a beautiful thing to do for somebody.
Definitely. Definitely.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
First track you bought from a record shop, please, Nally.
First one. I really had to do some research on this one because I had a memory in my head, but then I had to go through dates and everything, and it just wasn't as cool as I thought it was going to be. So I thought it was going to be Desiree, but it wasn't because I checked my dates, and it's actually Back for Good by Take That.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
I wasn't even like a massive fan, but everybody bought it.
Yeah, I bought it.
See?
Yeah.
But also it was moody and it was like, again, rain and loads of good things.
What a review. You are Back for Good by Take That. It's like rain and good things. Anything else? No.
Nah, just, you know, just some rain. And I think it was in black and white. So it was loads of the great qualities of music of that time.
Yeah. It did. I suppose it did feel like maybe the first like grown-up song Take That had done. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It felt a little bit more. They'd obviously, this was around the time of, I guess, Britpop and Oasis and lots of guitars. And obviously this was guitar-led, wasn't it, with the acoustic and stuff. And yeah, had a bit of rain and some good stuff.
Had some rain and some good stuff. Yeah. And, you know, again, it was like you got a real glimpse into their pain.
Yeah. Absolutely. Whilst Howard's doing the splits in a puddle. I felt that pain as well.
Yeah, I felt that crotch pain. It's sadly, I think that was, I really wanted it to be something cooler, but of course it wasn't. I mean, look at the state of me. Like, it's just, no, it wasn't cooler than that. It was Take That.
And so in them formative years when you was at school and stuff, did you know what you wanted to be?
No, I knew acting was always sort of alongside my life. But when I got to school, I actually did it separate from school because I got really embarrassed about everything. So,
oh, really?
The thought of like performing or singing or doing anything in front of my peers was just mortifying. And also because I went to a mixed school. So I just, you know, it's, and the added layer of the opposite sex is just really complicated. I think like I totally would have thrived if I was at a girls' school, but I don't know. I think you're being passionate about anything is quite difficult at that age because you're constantly testing to see if it's okay.
Yeah.
So you're not really actually living the passion of it because there's that fear of going, if I expose myself in any way and it's not, this could be crushing.
Yeah.
So I actually kept it really, really separate. And it was only when applying for drama school, when I towards leaving secondary school, that I started to say to people, like, I'm going to give it a go and see if it goes anywhere. And loads of people were really shocked. They were just, yeah.
Did it seem like, and I mean this with the greatest respect, did it seem possible, you know, a career in the arts living in Devon?
Yes and no. Yes, because I knew people did it, but also I didn't really have, I mean, my parents were very encouraging to a certain degree, but also they didn't understand it massively. So yes, in a way, because I knew people did it, but also it just felt like a punt. It didn't really feel like, I don't know. And also I was at that age where you can't really see past like a year.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I couldn't really associate myself with that. But it was mainly getting to drama school. So I just used to get that train up to London all the time to do the drama school auditions. And it was only really once I'd got in that I was like, oh my God, there is a whole world here that I just hadn't been party to. And I'd had bits of it in Plymouth and, you know, other theatres around Devon of musicals and certain people coming down. But also we are, you know, you are slightly outside of the London sphere or like all of that. So the stuff that you're getting, I only really knew about three musicals and didn't really see that many plays. So it was, yeah.
So did you relocate to London for drama school?
I did, yeah, which was a huge move and just frightening, really frightening.
How old was you?
18.
Wow.
I remember my mum dropped me off. Like, she did the classic. We went to IKEA and got loads of stuff and tat. And then, like, I remember her getting on the train to go back to Devon. And it was the first time, because I was, the whole time she was there, I was like, oh my God, could you just go? Like, everyone's going to see that you're here. And she was just, I'm just trying to fill your cupboards. I was like, everything you're doing is embarrassing. You need to just get out. And bless her, being really nice. And then we were at the train at Paddington and I'd been pushing her and pushing and pushing her to go. And then I remember seeing her get on the platform and this wave of just like, don't go, please don't go. Like, the panic of suddenly going, I'm going to have to be me now. I'm going to have to be a version of myself to this whole group of people who don't know who I am and my new part of my life sort of thing. And it was overwhelming, like hugely overwhelming, because you suddenly go, I have to now stand on my own 2 feet and I've been wanting it. But now that it's here, I feel really like about it.
How long did it take to kind of find your feet, I guess?
I mean, London's still quite scary for me. I mean, I remember I was going to Stoke Newington and being on the bus from like Old Street to Stoke Newington. And I was like, this is the furthest I've ever been in London. And it wasn't even that far. Like, it just isn't that far. But I remember being like, oh my God, this is basically the sticks. And I'd say it maybe took about 6 years before I properly felt like, not worried about going anywhere. But even I remember South London for ages, I was like, where? Like, yeah, just terrible. Get the fear of getting caught in Clapham, because I was like, because it was before maps, so you were like, couldn't tell you. Yeah. Couldn't tell you where I am.
I still get that in South London, I'm not gonna lie.
I know. South London's got such a bad rep. No, but like, it was terrifying at that point when you didn't have a blue dot on your phone showing you where you were.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So aside from all of the kind of readjustment and stuff like that, in regards to your capabilities at drama school, was you confident?
I think it's a really interesting time of self-discovery. I think I had a version of myself that I was very happy to put out when you come from school.
Yeah.
You have your sort of thing of like, this is who I am. This is what I like. I'm very black and white about stuff. Don't mess with me sort of vibes. And then that goes in about a month.
Yep.
And you're like sort of left there going, oh my God, I don't have any opinions and I don't really know anything about anything.
I still sort of float around in that kind of place.
I know. It's a really grey matter place. I was confident that I enjoyed the work and I enjoyed playing I remember being really scared about looking silly in front of these cool new people who knew about drama, who'd been to London theatres and seen loads of stuff and knew how to get into Notting Hill on the tube. Like, they all were just really cool.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really, I mean, a lot of it is just blagging it. And then even your first sort of few, I mean, our whole career is blagging it. You go to most rooms and go, yeah, Yeah. I totally feel about this character, and I totally understand everything you're saying. And then you just panic and do loads of research after. That so much of the job is that. But also, obviously, as you work, like, there is a sense of going, of confidence of going, I know what I can at least do.
Yeah.
So it's not always having a confidence of going, I can walk into any room. But I think if you can be as transparent sometimes as possible, it's better than pretending to have all the answers, which I think you spend a lot of your early life doing.
Definitely.
Because the fear of not knowing, you know? Whereas I think embracing that I don't know is such a joy.
Completely. Well, I imagine one of the other things that presented itself at 18 when you get to London is clubbing.
Oh my God, Stu, I wish you'd see me at 18. Because the fact that this question was even on there, I had to ring my friend Moo and I was like, have we been to a club ever? And she was like, you must have been to Fabric or Ministry of Sound. Fabric was so close to your drama school. And I was like, genuinely no. Like, I just, people did do it. Like, I have a vague recollection. But the only clubbing I can remember doing was either like places like Tiger Tiger or... Yep. Or candy store, or like just like places where the floor lit up, like rather than really cool places.
Yeah.
Like I just, and also because London, we were all at drama school. So like no one had any money and we were always working. So I didn't have the uni experience of clubbing.
Yeah. It's so weird. Like I can make you feel better about this because you're probably in about 80% of the guests. Like, because anybody...
Genuinely.
Yeah. Anybody in the arts, like... So comedians are generally doing stand-up. Actors are generally acting. Musicians are touring. And DJs are DJing. They're not dancing. And and so that answer of, well, I didn't really do it.
Just didn't do it.
80% of the guests have said that.
Okay, that makes me feel so much better because I do really feel... I feel really envious. Like, there's a group of people who I know... who club or go to festivals. And I do feel really envious of that friendship unit because you've got loads of memories and loads of like stuff.
So when you spoke to your best friend, did she give you any kind of heads up on songs that you may have found yourself falling around Tiger Tiger to?
She said, she was like, first of all, she was like, don't lie. Don't lie and say a song that you think's cool because then they're going to ask you about it and you're not going to be able to talk about it. And I was like, I mean, she's absolutely right. And that was my instinct. But actually, if I think about the song that really soundtracked going out, it was Mr. Brightside.
Yeah.
It just was. It was such a tune and it is still such a tune and it is amazing that it never ends. Like, it just follows you in different parts of your life and now it's at weddings all the time. But, like, it is the... It's the floor filler.
It's perfect.
Oh,
perfect pop music. There's nothing wrong with that. And I had one of the killers on the podcast.
I know. I saw and I was overwhelmed.
And when... I asked him for the greatest ever intro. I thought, are you
Come on.
Fucking joking? You wrote Mr. Brightside. Why
I can't
are you not
didn't say
choosing? Oh no! But it's one of them songs that I DJ at my venue. I run an indie club, and so for the last, it's probably 15 to 20 years old now. That song, it's been rinsed, and it got to the point where I thought, I think. I've had enough of it.
And
then I saw them perform it live at a smaller stage at Glastonbury and they played it like it was their first ever tour and they played it with such passion and it just thundered through and I just thought, this is just reminding me that...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the perfect pop song. And like the fact that like my kids dance to their, it's the biggest song of the night at their prom. And I just think it's crazy how these certain songs weave their way into just the fabric of life. And like, and it's just wherever you go, where there's a connection and a collective of people, some songs, as a DJ, I know that record will get me out of trouble anywhere.
Drop that
and the party starts. It's a gem, isn't it?
Oh God, it's just so good. And I mean, I think it was actually the first song that I ever had as a ringtone as well. Like it was, I just wanted it everywhere at all points.
Yeah.
It's just, it was just such a good song to scream sing as well. Like to really scream sing.
Like, I've never heard that. You said it like it's like an actual thing.
Oh my God,
you singing? No, I was scream singing.
No, I was screaming. What were you doing last night? Scream singing. Yeah, but like that thing of being hoarse, but also it's a great one for weddings if you don't know loads of people.
Definitely.
Like it is one of those ones where you're like, oh, do you know what? I think John's really sound. Like you just meet people really quick, really quickly. It's just one of the greatest songs I think ever.
Perfect. Let's take you home.
Yeah.
Favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
This was quite tricky because I had to do some Googling in terms of who was from Devon. I was aware of your big ones. I was aware of Joss Stone and I was aware of Will Young. Mm-hmm. But it has to be Chris Martin, Coldplay. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say Fix You.
Oh, it's the best one. It's the best one.
It is the best one. I mean, I have to say, I out of nostalgia, I then went through Rush Blood to the Head and like went through a lot of the tracks and God, like I have such strong memories for each of those songs of like being somewhere or thinking about someone or obsessing about someone. Mm. But Fix You was just, I don't know, just felt really personal. And I think, I mean, obviously, you know, I now know sort of, you know, stories about why it was written or who it was for or whatever. But even at the time you were like, oh, this just hits somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. You're the first person that's ever chose a Coldplay record on here, and I'm stunned.
On your whole show?
Yeah, 350 episodes, and you have literally...
Stu, I'm so glad I haven't listened to all of your other episodes, because I think the crippling shame of then coming on would have been horrendous. But
No, because sometimes I think Coldplay get a hard time.
They do get a bad... Yeah, they do.
But I think, go back and listen to them first few albums, and there's not a dud on them. I saw them a few times. Have you seen them live?
No, I haven't. My friend has moved, but no, I haven't.
I saw them on the Rush of Blood tour on the first night and the last night. And that the first night was still one of the best gigs I'd ever seen, because I think, I don't even know if the album had been out, but you was hearing like some of the songs like the first time and they were like, oh my God, these are like ridiculous. Like, and you'd seen them go from... your Yellows and Troubles from this breaking band to like, oh right, hang on, no, these are stadium filling rock stars.
Yes.
This is like, this is something special. And I'll tell you what, there's a documentary on Amazon Prime. I think it's called like Head Full of Dreams or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's the story of Coldplay. And there's, I don't know if you know this, but there's five members. So the fifth member's their manager who met them at uni when they all met. And he filmed everything. So he's filmed their first like house parties where they're playing the guitar, first ever gig. And they've put this thing together and it's their five of them and their journey as friends. And it's, I've not really been a big fan of what they've done after Fix You, really.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful documentary that just friendship rides through everything. And like, it's a lovely watch. And yeah, you get a couple of hours like, on a Sunday
totally
or whatever,
it's
a lovely watch. It really is. But I don't know if you do this, but like if I'm feeling a little blue,
Yeah.
I'll listen to something sad. But the thing that does me is crowd singing. Right? If I hear crowd singing, it breaks me in half.
Yeah.
And if you YouTube Coldplay Fix You.
Oh my god.
And like, and you hear like the Glastonbury crowd singing it, like I've got to literally just give myself goosebumps. Yeah. It's like,
but you're totally right, you know, because actually when we were talking about the pandemic, because Glastonbury did a whole thing of releasing, you know, highlights from Glastonbury over the years and stuff, and we watched quite a few of them. And I was weeping.
Yeah.
Because it was just that, it was the collective shared experience. And obviously because of what I do and the fact that, you know, theatres and my, that side of my industry was also gone. Like, that's what we crave, is just that one heartbeat of people, which you cannot replicate. Like, screen and everything is brilliant. And of course, you know, streaming and Netflix and all of that is fantastic. It is just not the same thing as being in a group of people. And as you say, you get that, you know, goose pimple experience, and it's just, oh God, I just think it's incredible.
You've created a really beautiful picture in my head then, but it's kind of side soundtrack by you scream singing it though, like,
oh yeah, if I was next to you wouldn't enjoy it, don't get me wrong, and you'd be like, do you remember that girl ruining our experience? Oh, 100% you, but like, but, you know, it's still, it's nice, isn't it? It's nice to have things to talk about. But yeah, no, I just think, oh yeah, I do think Fix You is a beautiful song.
Couldn't agree more. Agree more. And you mentioned obviously theatre and acting, and I touched on confidence earlier, Natalie. And what I always like to ask guests that generally kind of struggle with the confidence question sometimes, of like, well, I sort of am in some areas. What about drive? Are you driven?
Yeah, I think I am. I think there has to be a drive, and there has to be a certain amount of confidence to do what we do. I think it would be bizarre, or slightly bizarre of me to be like, oh no, don't look at me. Oh, by the way, clap though when I'm done. I think I can totally understand a lot of actors are shy and, you know, experience incredible confidence issues and all of that. And I can understand that, because it's weird. It's a very weird thing to do. Mm. But actually I'd say the most exposed I've ever felt, I've done one musical, well, like a proper musical, like full musical, I mean. And that was, and I did Bend It Like Beckham. And that was the first time I'd ever sung like that in a work environment. And in terms of feeling vulnerable and exposed, there is nothing like it. It is like acting times 1,000, because you cannot hide. And I think, however, the exhilaration of singing, because of that openness and because of that, I don't know, I guess that sort of shared experience with the audience, I can see the rush. Like, it was my one probable rock star moment, really, in terms of that. And I think it's addictive. So yes, to answer your question, yes, I do think there is drive. I think if I didn't have it, I would have chosen something much easier. Yeah. Like, I just would have done, like, there's lots of careers that I'm sure could have brought me joy and stability and a lot more safety than what I've chosen. However, I think I chose to pursue something that totally makes my heart sing. And I think it's really a roller coaster ride, but I couldn't give it up.
Wonderful. Well, last track, and you play Tastemaker here. And so for track 7, Natalie, I'm going to ask you, please, you're making me nervous at the fact that you're laughing now. This is going to be another shocker.
It's true.
This is the closing credits to Baywatch.
No, it's not. But you know what? I don't know if you'll even know the song.
Okay. Well, that's the idea. That's the idea.
But I've really put it out there now, and you're going to be like, everyone knows this song.
Okay.
So I actually had to Google this song, because the reason I chose it is because I thought my dad wrote it. So it was one of those songs that was in my childhood, and he'd sing it all the time, and I thought it was really banging, like a really banging tune, but thought he'd written it. Also feel like he didn't correct me on that, and I feel like he really egged on this thing that he had written it. So I actually had to Google it, but it's called The Clapping Song by Shirley Ellis.
369, the goose dragged the monkey took the back one.
The lion broke, the monkey got choked, and they all went to... Yeah, I thought he wrote it.
Mm.
So then having listened to it and realizing that he hadn't, but the joy of that song, it's very difficult to not listen to it and not be happy.
Yeah.
It's just I mean, a lot of my songs are unadulterated joy, or I want to cry or scream sing to them. But this one is a definite, you just put it on and smile. Also think of my dad, because he didn't write it, but
I love the fact that he dined out on it for a bit though.
Oh my God. Totally. Like totally. I remember being in the car and thinking, oh my God, he's really smashed this.
Well, I don't know how old your dad is, but it did get I can't think who it was that covered it in the early 80s. Like,
must have been, yeah.
Somebody covered it in the early 80s, and that's how I heard it. I didn't hear like the original until much later, like the Shirley Ellis version. Have you heard Shirley Ellis do The Name Game?
No.
So have you ever watched, Lady Gaga was in it, the TV series, American Horror Story?
I haven't seen it because it's scary.
Ah, right. There's an amazing scene where they do this song called The Name Game. Go on YouTube, and if you find The Name Game by Shirley Ellis, if you like the clapping song, you will love this, because it's just as infectious, such as quirky and cool as the clapping song. You're going to love it. And I'm pretty sure your dad didn't write it, but maybe Wikipedia is just a check.
I can definitely say no, yeah. The Name Game, I'm totally going to check that out. See, that's the gift of song.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the clapping song's a brilliant choice. Again, yes. No one's ever mentioned that on here. That's a great song.
I know, Stu, but you're really saying that as an act of kindness.
No, like, I'm not. I love that song.
I feel like a lot of yours are like, it's so weird. I've done 300 shows and nobody likes any of your songs. But I feel really proud to be unique. I really hope someone listens to this and goes, do you know what? That poor Nat girl, she's got terrible taste in music, but she's given us a bit of honesty.
Well, we put together a Spotify playlist.
Oh my God, it's going to be the least listened to one.
Oh, should I just put up Nat 48?
Do you know what? Just put that on. It would be exactly the same. Do that. Oh,
so we do put a playlist together, Natalie, of all of the songs that we've spoke about today. I think you're selling yourself short. There's some crackers on this playlist.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe I won't check how many people are listening to it, but like, I'd say if you're feeling a bit blue, put on my one.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe skip Fix You, though, if you're feeling a bit blue.
Oh, yeah. No, true. Yeah, true.
So moving forwards, as we approach the end of 2021 as a far more happy and connected and I guess more back to a world that we were more sort of comfortable with and familiar with, what are you looking forward to from the rest of this year personally, and what's going to be happening professionally?
What am I looking forward to? I think allowing myself to just go and do things more. Like, I know that sounds really basic, but I think it's really easy to go, oh, I maybe shouldn't go on that trip. Instead, I'll just get a boiler. Or like, it's very easy to sort of be pragmatic, mm-hmm. And also put off seeing friends until it's an occasion. Mm-hmm. And I think, if anything, coming out of it, it's way more about just go out, have dinner, go out for drinks, whatever. Just be so, we are social beings, be with each other, you know. So I'm definitely going to take that forward. Sandylands, the show that I filmed this year, is coming out this weekend.
Wonderful.
So I'm really excited about that being out there. And hopefully just more filming and hopefully more theatre. But just work, work.
Lovely. And if people want to keep up to speed with everything you're doing, where's the best place to find out what you're up to?
Socials. I mean, as what everyone says, I guess socials.
Yep.
I've never actually said that out loud. Just find me on my socials. But yeah, I think probably being honest. Yeah. I think that's probably the best way.
Okay. Well, we'll tag you in it when this comes out. Natalie, I've had such fun today.
Thanks, it's been
such a joy chatting with you, mate.
You've really, really made my morning. I was incredibly anxious. I had a lot of coffee. And now I feel like I've actually had a lovely time.
Wonderful. Thanks, Nat. Thank you.
Thanks, Stu.
Oh, wow. What a chat. Oh, it was just so much fun, Matt. I loved the fact that Natalie was concerned that she wasn't going to be picking cool records. There's no coolness about this podcast. I think you all know that by now. Pick the records that soundtrack that point. And like, and yeah, no one was cool when they were kids. You know, if you are, I'm questioning that. Yeah, wonderful chat. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. excuse me. I didn't mention it at the beginning, but if you'd like to support the podcast, then go check out my Patreon. Patreon's like a kind of crowdfunder where I don't cough in the microphone. It's like a crowdfunder type thing where it's like a complete sort of standalone social media account, really, where basically you pay me 99 pence a month. What's that? 20p a week. And then each week I'll upload video episodes, radio shows, Spotify playlists, and also a back catalogue you have access to of like 200 episodes that have never been released to the general public. By doing that, you support the podcast. It all goes in the pot to pay for the production of this. And yeah, so it's much appreciated. So you can find out about that at Patreon, patreon.com/ off the beat and track. Or anything else you need to know about this podcast, just go to your one-stop shop, www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time. Thanks again to Natalie for giving up her time to have that lovely chat. I'll see you next week. Be excellent to each other. Love you. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Keep me, Stu Whippin. Ain't it fucking?